You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on The Daily Stoic. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on The Daily Stoic, 366 Meditations on Wisdom, Perseverance, and the Art of Living by Ryan Holiday and Stephen Hanselman. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. The private diaries of one of Rome's great emperors, the personal letters of one of Rome's best playwrights and wisest power brokers, the lectures of a former slave and exile turned influential teacher. Against all the odds in the passing of some two millennia, these incredible documents survive. What do they say? Could these ancient and obscure pages really contain anything relevant to modern life? The answer, as it turns out, is yes. They contain some of the greatest wisdom in the history of the world. Together, these documents constitute the bedrock of what is known as Stoicism, an ancient philosophy that was once one of the most popular civic disciplines in the West, practiced by the rich and the impoverished, the powerful and the struggling alike, in the pursuit of the good life. But over the centuries, knowledge of this way of thinking, once essential to so many, slowly faded from view. Our goal with this book is to restore Stoicism to its rightful place as a tool in the pursuit of self-mastery, perseverance, and wisdom. Something one uses to live a great life, rather than some esoteric field of academic inquiry. End quote. That is Ryan Holiday from The Daily Stoic. This book combines two of my favorite things, Stoicism and Ryan Holiday's wisdom. This is the third book of Ryan's we've covered. Check out the notes, plus interviews, on The Obstacle is the Way, plus The Ego is the Enemy for more. We also have a dozen notes on Stoic classics, including Aurelius's Meditations, Seneca's Letters from a Stoic and On the Shortness of Life, and Epictetus's Enchiridion and The Discourses. Stoicism was the most influential philosophy of the Roman world and has continued to influence many of history's greatest minds, including George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Theodore Roosevelt, and Ralph Waldo Emerson. Stoicism was also one of the primary inspirations for Albert Ellis as he developed the foundation of what is now cognitive behavioral therapy. As Ryan says, it's time to bring it back as a powerful tool in the pursuit of self-mastery, perseverance, and wisdom. I rarely say this, but I think this is a must-read. Why? Well, any serious student of optimizing needs to be familiar with what the Stoic sages said. And this is literally the perfect introduction, as Ryan pulls wisdom from Seneca, plus Epictetus, plus Aurelius, plus some other less-known Stoics, and then helps us apply the wisdom to our modern lives. To put it in perspective, I told Alexandra that this might be my favorite book I've ever read. That's how much I loved it. The book is packed with big ideas, 366 of them to be precise. I'm excited to share a few of my favorites, so let's jump straight in. Big idea number one, Stoicism 101, the number one thing to know. Quote, the single most important practice in Stoic philosophy is differentiating between what we can change and what we can't. What we have influence over and what we do not. A flight is delayed because of weather. No amount of yelling at an airline representative will end a storm. No amount of wishing will make you taller or shorter or born in a different country. No matter how hard you try, you can't make someone like you. And on top of that, time spent hurling yourself at these immovable objects is time not spent on the things we can change. The recovery community practices something called the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Addicts cannot change the abuse suffered in childhood. They cannot undo the choices they have made or the hurt they have caused. But they can change the future through the power they have in the present moment. As Epictetus said, they can control the choices they make right now. The same is true for us today. If we can focus on making clear what parts of our day are within our control and what parts are not, we will not only be happier, we will have a distinct advantage over other people who fail to realize they are fighting an unwinnable battle." End quote. Now, this book is a year-long guide of 366 daily meditations on Stoic wisdom. That's from January 1st, day one. The first thing we need to understand about Stoicism is this: the practice of seeing what's within our control and what is not. And then, of course, training ourselves to stay focused on what is within our control rather than getting caught up trying to control that which is outside of our control. Guess what? Ultimately, the only things within our control are the choices we are making right this moment. Hence, the focal point of Stoicism is beautifully captured in the Serenity Prayer: "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference." So, how are you doing with that? Little P.S. here. Here's the quote from Epictetus's Discourses that Ryan is reflecting on in the passage above. Epictetus tells us, quote, "The chief task in life is simply this: to identify and separate matters so that I can say clearly to myself which are externals not under my control and which have to do with the choices I actually control. Where then do I look for good and evil? Not to uncontrollable externals, but within myself, to the choices that are my own." End quote. Little PPS, another cool facet of this book is the fact that Ryan's co-author, Stephen Hanselman, produced original translations of each of the 366 wisdom gems shared in the book. Next big idea: want tranquility? Believe in yourself, walk your path. Quote, in Seneca's essay on tranquility, he uses the Greek word euthymia, which he defines as believing in yourself and trusting that you are on the right path, and not being in doubt by following the myriad footpaths of those wandering in every direction. It is this state of mind, he says, that produces tranquility. Clarity of vision allows us to have this belief. That's not to say we're always going to be 100% certain of everything, or that we even should be. Rather, it's that we can rest assured we're heading generally in the right direction, that we don't need to constantly compare ourselves with other people or change our mind every 3 seconds based on new information. Instead, tranquility and peace are found in identifying our path and in sticking to it, staying the course, making adjustments here and there naturally, but ignoring the distracting sirens who beckon us to turn toward the rocks. End quote. We talked about euthymia in our notes on "The Ego is the Enemy." Euthymia. Isn't that one of the most beautiful words? We need to have enough self-awareness to say, this is my path. Then, we need to have the courage to walk that path without constantly comparing ourselves to others and changing our minds about what's important every 3 seconds. The result? Tranquility. So, how's your clarity? What are you here to do? Are you doing it? P.S. Here's the passage from Seneca's Moral Letters, which is also called Letters from a Stoic, that we have notes on, that Ryan is riffing on above. Seneca tells us, quote, "Tranquility can't be grasped except by those who have reached an unwavering and firm power of judgment. The rest constantly fall and rise in their decisions, wavering in a state of alternately rejecting and accepting things. What is the cause of this back and forth? It's because nothing is clear, and they rely on the most uncertain guide, common opinion." End quote. Note, the primary obstacle to your tranquility? Failing to step back from the common opinion of the world and, as Emerson would say, trusting yourself as your own taskmaster. Unplug, check in, get clear, do what you're here to do. Next big idea. Question: what's the latest and greatest? Answer: I don't care. Quote, one of the most powerful things you can do as a human being in our hyper-connected 24/7 media world is to say, I don't know. Or, more provocatively, I don't care. Most of society seems to have taken it as a commandment that one must know about every single current event, watch every episode of every critically acclaimed television series, follow the news religiously, and present themselves to others as an informed and worldly individual. But where is the evidence that this is actually necessary? Is the obligation enforced by the police? Or is it that you're just afraid of seeming silly at a dinner party? Yes, you owe it to your country and your family to know generally about events that may directly affect them, but that's about all. How much more time, energy, and pure brain power would you have available if you drastically cut your media consumption? How much more rested and present would you feel if you were no longer excited and outraged by every scandal, breaking story, and potential crisis, many of which never come to pass anyway? End quote. This is one of my favorite passages ever. If you're on top of every single thing going on in the world, every TV show, every breaking story, etc., infinite, etc., guess what you are guaranteed to be out of touch with? Your own path. The common opinion you have chosen to immerse yourself in will rob you of the tranquility you so desperately desire. Combine that with the sheer terror of the media we're exposed to, and it's not a winning formula. Science proves this, by the way. Do you know the single best predictor of someone's fear and anxiety? It's how much time they spend watching TV talk shows. In The Upside of Stress, Kelly McGonigal also tells us that people who watched more than 6 hours of the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing had more PTSD symptoms than people who were actually there and experienced the event firsthand. Think about that for a second. We simply did not evolve to consume so much stimulation. Our limbic system can't effectively differentiate between a stress over there and something happening right here, right now. As Alberto Villoldo puts it in One Spirit Medicine, we evolved to respond to a single lion threatening our lives, not to the whole jungle rising up against us. He tells us we are exposed to more stimuli in 1 week than our ancient ancestors were exposed to in their entire lifetimes. One way to deal with the onslaught of information? Practice, I don't know. Or even more fun, I don't care. Let's pause for a moment to actually answer this question. How much more time, energy, and pure brain power would you have available if you drastically cut your media consumption? Track how you spend your time for a week and do the math. How much time can you reclaim? Will you? Little P.S. Here's the brilliant passage from Epictetus's Enchiridion that Ryan riffed on above. Epictetus tells us, quote, "If you wish to improve, be content to appear clueless or stupid in extraneous matters. Don't wish to seem knowledgeable. And if some regard you as important, distrust yourself." End quote. Next big idea, what kind of boxer are you? Quote, "The Stoics love to use boxing and wrestling metaphors the way we use baseball and football analogies today. This is probably because the sport of pancration, literally all strength, but a purer form of mixed martial arts than one sees today in the UFC, was integral to boyhood and manhood in Greece and Rome. In fact, recent analysis has found instances of cauliflower ear, a common grappling injury, on Greek statues. The Stoics refer to fighting because it's what they knew." Seneca writes that unbruised prosperity is weak and easy to defeat in the ring. But a man who has been at constant feud with misfortunes acquires a skin calloused by suffering. This man, he says, fights all the way to the ground and never gives up. That's what Epictetus means too. What kind of boxer are you if you leave because you get hit? That's the nature of the sport. Is that going to stop you from continuing? End quote. Now let's start with the passage from Epictetus's discourses that Ryan's reflecting on. Epictetus tells us, quote, "But what is philosophy? Doesn't it simply mean preparing ourselves for what may come? Don't you understand that that really amounts to saying that if you would prepare yourself to endure, then let anything happen that will. Otherwise, it would be like the boxer exiting the ring because he took some punches. Actually, you can leave the ring without consequence, but what advantage would come from abandoning the pursuit of wisdom? So, what should each of us say to every trial we face? This is what I've trained for this, my discipline. End quote. Imagine a boxer taking a couple punches and then simply walking out of the ring. That'd be a little odd, eh? Well, do you do that? The moment things get tough as you pursue your grand vision of awesome, do you walk out of the ring and into Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, email, online news, your favorite TV show, insert your chosen way of avoiding the challenges of life here? We need to lean into our challenges, knowing, as we discuss all the time, that our infinite potential exists just on the other side of this current challenge, and right on the other side of the next one, and the one after that. In a book called The Philosophy of Cognitive Behavioral Therapy, CBT, that traces the historical roots of modern CBT to ancient Stoicism, that Ryan recommended and that we'll be covering soon, Donald Robertson tells us that, back in the day, philosophers were warriors of the mind. Now, they're mere librarians of the mind. These days, it's all intellectual theory, cataloging and logic chopping, as the Stoics would call it. No practice. But philosophy, as the Stoics saw it, was a battle. We need to approach it with the fierce intensity of a warrior. And we need to know that all those times we've gotten knocked down and back up are actually a strength, not a weakness. Those calluses on your soul are good things. They've toughened you up. We want to be, as Ryan says, the one who, quote, fights all the way to the ground and never gives up. I got goosebumps as I typed that. I'm reminded of the story I've shared a few times about the time an investor in my last business introduced me to his friends who were thinking about investing by simply saying, I like Brian because he knows how to get knocked down and bloodied and then get back up off the mat. Tell us about your business, Brian. At that stage, I was somewhat ashamed of my failures, hello, fixed mindset, and yet getting up off the mat was what he saw as a key asset of our business. I guess he liked entrepreneurial calluses. Angela Duckworth calls this grit, of course, in her great book outlining the science of how to cultivate our grit via intense passion plus intense persistence. She says, quote, there's an old Japanese saying, fall 7, rise 8. If I were ever to get a tattoo, I'd get these four simple words indelibly inked. A warrior who gets knocked down and gets back up. When tough times come, and of course they will, remember, this is what we trained for. Fight to the ground. Never give up. Next big idea. You have two essential tasks in life. Here they are. Quote, you have two essential tasks in life, to be a good person and to pursue the occupation that you love. Everything else is a waste of energy and a squandering of your potential. How does one do that? Okay, that's a tougher question. But the philosophy we see from the Stoics makes it simple enough. Say no to distractions, to destructive emotions, to outside pressure. Ask yourself, what is it that only I can do? What is the best use of my limited time on this planet? Try to do the right thing when the situation calls for it. Treat other people the way you would hope to be treated. And understand that every small choice and tiny matter is an opportunity to practice these larger principles. That's it. That's what goes into the most important skill of all, how to live. End quote. Well, that makes it simple, eh? We have two essential tasks. One, be a good person. Two, do work that you love. Simple, but far from easy. Reminds me of Warren Bennis, who says that, at bottom, becoming a leader is synonymous with becoming yourself. It's precisely that simple, and it's also that difficult. Precisely that simple, and precisely that difficult. A few questions to help us on the quest. What is it that only you can do? What is the best use of your limited time on this planet? And are you treating people the way you'd like to be treated? Be a good person. Do work that you love. Well, what do you say to those questions? And by the way, there are 25 journal exercises like that in Purpose 101. If you haven't checked it out yet, check it out. That leads us to our final big idea, the art of acquiescence, plus amor fati. Quote, something happened that we wish had not. Which of these is easiest to change, our opinion or the event that is past? The answer is obvious. Accept what happened and change your wish that it had not happened. Stoicism calls this the art of acquiescence, to accept rather than fight every little thing. And the most practiced Stoics take it a step further. Instead of simply accepting what happens, they urge us to actually enjoy what has happened, whatever it is. Nietzsche, many centuries later, coined the perfect expression to capture this idea, amor fati, a love of fate. It's not just accepting, it's loving everything that happens. To wish for what has happened to happen is a clever way to avoid disappointment, because nothing is contrary to your desires. But to actually feel gratitude for what happens, to love it, that's a recipe for happiness and joy. End quote. Byron Katie channels her inner Stoic when she tells us we need to practice loving what is. She tells us to quit arguing with reality, but only because we lose every single time we do so. We need to discipline ourselves, like a warrior, to not only accept what is, but to truly love what is. The result? We're invincible. At that point, nothing can happen to us that we can't alchemize into something that fuels our optimization. Let's learn to love our fate, joyfully accepting the things we can't change, and courageously changing the things we can, as we develop the wisdom to know the difference. Here's to our Stoic optimization. That was a super quick look at this great book, The Daily Stoic, Ryan Holiday. Learn more about him at ryanholiday.net. I'll share some titles you might like if you liked this one. But first, let's enjoy some great quotes, and then we'll wrap it up. Seneca tells us, of all the people, only those are at leisure who make time for philosophy. Only they truly live. Not satisfied to merely keep good watch over their own days, they annex every age to their own. All the harvest of the past is added to their store. Only an ingrate would fail to see that these great architects of venerable thoughts were born for us and have designed a way of life for us. Ryan Holiday tells us, if there's a central message of Stoic thought, it's this. Impulses of all kinds are going to come, and your work is to control them, like bringing a dog to heel. Put more simply, think before you act. Ask, who is in control here? What principles are guiding me? Seneca tells us, the greatest portion of peace of mind is doing nothing wrong. Those who lack self-control live disoriented and disturbed lives. Back to Ryan, who tells us, our ambition should not be to win, then, but to play with our full effort. Back to Seneca, who tells us, we must give up many things to which we are addicted, considering them to be good. Otherwise, courage will vanish, which should continually test itself. Greatness of soul will be lost, which can't stand out unless it disdains as petty what the mob regards as most desirable. Back to Ryan, who tells us, having an end in mind is no guarantee that you'll reach it. No Stoic would tolerate that assumption. But not having an end in mind is a guarantee you won't. Ryan tells us, don't you deserve to flourish? Wouldn't you like to be great of soul, filled with confidence, and invincible to external events? Then practice your philosophy. He tells us, strength is the ability to maintain a hold of oneself. It's being the person who never gets mad, who cannot be rattled because they are in control of their passions, rather than controlled by their passions. And finally, Epictetus tells us, what does Socrates say? Just as one person delights in improving his farm and another his horse, so I delight in attending to my own improvement day by day. good old incremental optimizer. Socrates was, Yoda says. All right, hope you enjoyed. If you did, I think you'll also enjoy the notes on Ryan's great books, The Obstacle is the Way, The Ego is the Enemy, and then a ton of books we've linked to in the note on Stoicism, including those by Aurelius, Epictetus, and Seneca, along with Mastery by Robert Greene, one of Ryan Holiday's mentors, Awareness by Anthony DeMello. He referenced DeMello more than once in the book. A Guide to Rational Living by Albert Ellis, essentially the founder of cognitive behavioral therapy. Thoughts of a Philosophical Fighter Pilot, one of the most embodied Stoic philosophers ever, James Stockdale. And then also Leading an Inspired Life by Jim Rohn. All right, there you go. What was your favorite big idea? How can you make it a more integrated part of your life today? Get on that. Practice this philosophy. We're not here for the theory, we're here for the practice.
We hope you enjoyed this philosopher's note. Please go to brianjohnson.me to download more.